Ever get the feeling that economists are kind of like obsessed with logic? Like they try to apply it to absolutely everything, even things like, I don't know, love or finding the perfect parking spot.
Well, to be fair, sometimes those logical models can be surprisingly insightful, you know. But then there are other times where it feels like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole.
And that's kind of what we're dealing with today, this idea of the Shimer puzzle. We're diving into labor search models. You can almost think of them like algorithms, but instead of like matching you with your soulmate on a dating app, they're trying to connect job seekers with open positions.
Yeah, it's a fascinating area of economics because these models are trying to represent this super complex dance between people looking for work and companies trying to hire. It's all about figuring out what influences how many jobs are out there, how much people are getting paid, and why unemployment rates seem to go up and down like a roller coaster.
Exactly. But here's the catch. These models, as beautifully crafted as they might be on paper, sometimes, well, they kind of miss the mark when it comes to predicting real-world data. It's almost like they expect this smooth, predictable flow in the labor market. But anyone who's ever applied for a job knows it's anything but smooth.
Yeah, and that's precisely where this paper by Orhan Tarul comes in. He dives into something called the Shimer puzzle, which basically points out that these labor search models often underestimate just how much the ratio of job openings to unemployed people actually fluctuates.
So it's like the model predicts calm waters, but in reality, we're dealing with choppy seas.
Exactly. And in this deep dive, we're going to really unpack what that means and why it matters. We'll be focusing specifically on pages 49 through 70 of Turrell's paper, really digging into this puzzle and three attempts to solve it.
Okay, so to even begin to understand the puzzle, we got to get a handle on the basics of these labor search models, right?
Right.
So Turrell starts by laying out this kind of economic simulation, kind of like a more complex version of SimCity, maybe. You have two main players, households and firms.
Right, like we're assigning motivations and behaviors to these two groups, households, for instance. They're driven by this idea of maximizing their utility, which is essentially economists speak for happiness or satisfaction. They get this utility from consuming goods and services. Of course, that requires income, and for most households, that income comes from, you guessed it, working.
So it's like a giant cost-benefit analysis that people are constantly running in their heads. Like, do I work more to buy that new phone or do I prioritize leisure time?
Exactly. You got it. And on the flip side, you have firms whose primary goal is always to maximize profits. So they need to figure out how many people to hire, how much to pay them, and how much to invest in, you know, actually finding the right workers.
It's interesting to think of it as this intricate game between these two groups, each trying to like optimize their own situation while also kind of navigating the actions of the other.
Absolutely. And like any good game, there are rules or at least factors that influence each player's decisions. For households, things like wages and unemployment benefits, those weigh heavily on their choices.
And for firms, well, they've got their own set of considerations, right? Productivity, the cost of actually posting those job openings, and of course, just the overall health of the economy, it all factors into their strategies.
Yeah, absolutely. And the really fascinating part is that both sides, households and firms, are making these decisions based not just on what's happening right now in this moment, but also on what they anticipate, what they expect will happen in the future.
Whoa, it's like they're playing 4D chess with the economy or something.
That's a pretty good analogy, actually. And this brings us back to the Shimer puzzle. So what Shimer and then subsequently Turrell in this paper observed is that these models, while they might be great at, you know, capturing the big picture, they tend to kind of smooth over the bumps and jolts of the real world labor market.
So instead of like a wild roller coaster ride, the models are predicting a leisurely stroll in the park.
Precisely. Precisely. They underestimate that volatility, that up and down, unpredictable nature of the market. Turrell really highlights this on page 58, showing just how much the model struggles to predict those sometimes really dramatic swings we see in the ratio of job openings to unemployed folks.
Okay, so the model needs a bit of a reality check, clearly. And what does Turrell propose? Like, what's his explanation for this discrepancy? What's missing?
Well, one of the most interesting insights from this paper, and it's something that keeps coming up on pages 60 and 61, is this idea of the crucial role of what economists call non-market activity.
Now, when I hear non-market activity, I'll be honest, my mind immediately goes to like baking sourdough bread at 3 in the morning or finally organizing that like ridiculously cluttered junk drawer, you know, all those things we do that never seem to make it onto our to-do lists, but somehow magically get done.
You're totally on the right track. It really does encompass all of that childcare, home production, leisure activities, even things like volunteer work. And what Troll found is that how we account for these activities, or really how the models account for them, can have a massive impact on their ability to accurately predict those labor market fluctuations.
So it's like all those, I don't know, seemingly insignificant details, the stuff we tend to just overlook, those are actually the key to solving this whole puzzle. That's pretty cool.
It really is. And to illustrate this, Troll actually walks us through 3 different models, each one tweaking that standard framework a bit, trying to better capture those real-world dynamics, you know, to make the model more accurately reflect what's going on. He starts with what's called the Scheimer model on page 57, which is kind of like our baseline, you know, the classic model, the OG, if you will, that kind of started it all.
Okay, so the OG labor market model. But like we said, we know it's got some limitations.
Exactly. It's like, it's a fantastic starting point, absolutely. But it doesn't quite capture the full picture, right? So the next contender that Troll looks at is the Hagedorn and Manofsky model, also on page 57. And this one throws in a couple of interesting twists.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What did they change? Like, what makes this model different? What did they change in this model to try and improve it?
So they actually made 2 key adjustments. First, they assumed more generous unemployment benefits. The thinking there is that if those benefits are more substantial, people might be a little less inclined to, you know, immediately jump back into a job. And that could, in theory, lead to more fluctuation in the labor market.
That makes sense. It's like a stronger safety net could make people more comfortable taking their time to find the right job rather than just taking the first thing that comes along.
Exactly. The second adjustment they made was to give workers a little bit less bargaining power when it came to wages. Now, this one might seem a little counterintuitive at first, but the idea is that if workers have less leverage to, like, negotiate for higher pay, firms might be more willing to hire, potentially leading to more movement in those unemployment and job opening numbers.
So it's about finding that sweet spot, that balance between job security and wage growth.
Precisely. But, and here's where it gets really interesting. On page 61, Troll points out that while this model, this Hagedorn and Manofsky model, does seem to do a better job of reflecting real-world data, it only really works under certain very specific conditions. And those conditions kind of hinge on this big assumption that non-market activity stays constant. Like, if we allow for the possibility that things like home production or, you know, how much leisure time people have, if we allow that to fluctuate along with the economy, then suddenly the model's predictive power kind of goes out the window.
So it's like we can't just analyze the labor market in a vacuum. We have to consider all these other factors, all the other things that are going on in people's lives that might influence their decisions about work.
Exactly. And that brings us to the third and final model that Troll explores in this paper, the Pissarides model. You can find it described on pages 57, 58, and 63. And this model, it introduces this concept of variable job posting costs. So instead of assuming that the cost of, like, advertising a job opening is always the same, it allows that cost to fluctuate, to change based on how competitive the hiring landscape is.
Okay, so if, like, every company and their dog is hiring, those job postings are going to cost more because companies need to up their game to attract talent.
Precisely. And then conversely, when there are fewer open positions, those costs would tend to go down. Now, intuitively, this makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah, it does. It seems to reflect what we see happening in the real world.
Exactly. But as Troll points out, and this is on page 63, this factor alone, this idea of variable job posting costs, it doesn't completely solve the puzzle on its own. It only really gets us closer to that real world data when it's combined with other elements, like this idea of what economists call sticky wages. And basically what that means is that wages don't always adjust very quickly to shifts in the labor market. So, you know, think about it like this. If the demand for a particular skill, like, suddenly skyrockets, it might take a while for wages to catch up, right? And that lag, that delay, can create some of those fluctuations that those more basic models, you know, as we talked about earlier, struggle to predict.
So, wow, we've really gone deep into these models, all their little nuances and assumptions. But for someone like me, you know, someone who's not an economist, but is just trying to, like, wrap their head around how this whole system works, what's the big takeaway here?
Honestly, I think the biggest takeaway from all of this is the importance of context. What this paper does so brilliantly is it really highlights how we can't just look at the labor market as this isolated thing. All those seemingly small, almost invisible aspects of our lives, how we spend our leisure time, how much unpaid work we're doing at home, all of that, it matters. You know, it influences our decisions about work. And then those decisions collectively, those shape the economy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like those ripple effects, you know, like a small change in one part of the system can have these huge, far-reaching effects.
Exactly. And it just underscores the sheer complexity of the systems that economists are trying to model. It's not just about, you know, numbers and equations on a page. It's about human behavior. And that behavior is influenced by this whole constellation of factors, some big, some small, some we probably haven't even thought of yet.
So I guess the next time we're tempted to, like, write off those economic models as being too simplistic, too out of touch with reality, maybe we should take a step back and remember that they're always works in progress. Like, economists are constantly refining them, trying to better capture the nuances of the human experience.
Absolutely. And who knows, maybe one day, thanks to the incredible work of economists like Orhan Tarul, we'll have models that can accurately predict not just the calm waters, but also those choppy, unpredictable seas of the labor market.
Now, that would be a deep dive for another day. But for now, we're going to have to leave it there. Join us next time as we explore a whole new set of fascinating questions and delve into another corner of the world through, you know, all that insightful research and expert analysis that we love to do here.